Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you. My name is Bruce Norris, and welcome to our show. Today we're joined by Christopher Thornburg. Christopher Thornburg is a founding partner of Beacon Economics. Dr. Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. Prior to launching Beacon, he worked with the UCLA Forecast, where he regularly authored the Outlooks for California. He received his PhD in business economics from the Anderson School, where he still teaches the MBA program. Dr. Thornburg, welcome to our show.
Great to be here. One big correction there. I actually don't work at UCLA anymore, but I am actually currently teaching at UC San Diego.
Okay. Thank you for making that. Okay. I had mentioned just briefly off air, I'd never interviewed an economist that I agreed with, which really leads me to my first question. Why do you think it is that economists can look at the same set of statistics and the same history of those statistics and come to very different conclusions?
Well, that really depends on which economist you're talking about. I think that there's sort of two sets of people out there who have been saying that things are fine, things are going to be fine, and they're doing it for completely different reasons. First of all, of course, there's a lot of Wall Street economists out there, and Wall Street economists are guys who try to basically support policy or create visions that will continue to keep transactions rolling. Wall Street makes their money on a commission, and when the things are good, those commissions roll in, and so they sit down and will write reports to keep those commissions flowing in, which means they will say good things about the economy, whether or not it's true. And we should understand that. I mean, let the buyer beware applies to information markets as well as everything else, and I think people very quickly forget that. One thing you have to do is go back to the late 90s when Wall Street was hawking a bunch of ridiculous information technology firms to us, telling us these are great investments. You know, why didn't we learn a lesson?
Well,
one half.
Okay.
There's another group of people out there who I think sincerely believe that they didn't see this coming down the pike. But in many ways, you know, a forecaster relies on the past to predict the future. And one of the issues we're all dealing with right now is that we don't have a past that reflects what's currently happening today. If you use past trends, it can give you false readings.
Okay. So what is new this time?
Well, this is a real estate bubble that of a size and extent that we've just never experienced. And when I say a bubble, of course, I'm talking about just a segment of the economy that is producing and selling their product at a rate that's just not feasible. It just has no sustainability because it's just so overdone. And from that context, of course, we're talking about both prices as well as the overall number of units that's been built in this economy over the last few years. Now, the reason this is larger than ever before goes back to securitization, a fundamental way this industry is different today than it was 20 years ago. Is 20 years ago, when you bought a home, when you built a home, you borrowed money from a banker, the banker was hanging onto the debt, you were hanging onto the home, and you had an eye-to-eye kind of connection. You sat down and you said, I want to borrow this much money to buy this home, and the banker sat across from you and said, yes or no. And that was always the fundamental limit on these real estate cycles. You'd hit a point in time where prices got so high that the banker would say no, and that would be it. The bubble was over. There's no more rampant speculation. But this time, we now exist in a world where that banker is no longer there. The bank no longer holds the mortgage. Now what happens, of course, is all this stuff is packaged up by the big investment banks and sold off as asset-backed securities. And because you now have so many levels of people working between the investor and the investee, that there's been no control, there's been no ability to have somebody there saying, no, you shouldn't make this loan, this is a bad bet. The mortgage broker, at the one end, they make their money in the commission, they don't care who's getting the money, they just want the money to go out. The banker, the investment banker who's buying up that mortgage to package it up and sell it off, they don't care. They're making their money on the commission. And, of course, Moody's and S&P, who are supposed to be rating these things, well, you know, they're going to stamp AAA on there because as soon as they stamp AAA on there, that makes the investment bank happy, which means there's going to be more mortgage-backed securities being made, which means they're going to make more money. So you have three levels of people making money on the transaction with no stake in the game, so to speak. before finally, when the money finally ends up with the asset finally ends up with the ultimate buyer, which was this bond buyer in a foreign market in a pension fund somewhere else. And with that breaking of that chain, you've had markets really doing crazy things.
Okay, you're describing to me what seems to be that we have an upcoming historic event coming, that we are historically so overpriced that we might have an historic decline, that we're so overbuilt we probably will be very slow in the future, maybe for a while. And at some point, we've sold so many lousy loans to somebody that's holding the bag that is that going to have systemic problems where people are concerned about funding our mortgages going into the future? That's a lot of questions, but
there's a lot. You put in a lot there, and I know my answers are taking too long, so I know.
No, that's okay. We have a very educated audience, so that's why I'm able to ask these questions, because what you've described is all true. Very big problem. We're about to pay for that in some way.
Well, I would say this. First of all, we are already already breaking records. For example, right now, the number of delinquencies and foreclosures are currently occurring in our economy have hit a record high, at least according to the Mortgage Bankers numbers. As a percent of outstanding loans, the number of loans that are 60-day overdue, 90-day overdue, that are currently entering foreclosures are at an all-time high.
Okay.
More importantly, when you look over past history, you see increases in delinquencies and foreclosures directly as a result of the labor market. That is to say, when unemployment is rising, you're seeing delinquencies and foreclosures rise. What you're seeing right now is absolutely unique. We are seeing increases in delinquencies and foreclosures in the midst of a tight labor market. A third thing, in past cycles, you typically see price declines of real estate in the context, yet again, of weak labor markets. The weaker the labor market, the more likely you are to see prices falling in a particular market. Right now, prices are falling in many of our largest cities, despite the fact that we have tight labor markets. So we're already breaking records. This has already entered into a realm that we just haven't been in before, and it's only going to get worse.
Is that why it made it so difficult to see coming? Because we had that, usually we thought we had that warning system, and this time the warning system didn't work.
Absolutely, it didn't work. I mean, the warning system was just completely broken.
Well, we just had the median price come out, and it was all good news for California. It was up year over year. And the Case-Shiller index would tell us other things. So what index do you rely on? And we price properties all the time, and I can tell you the market is descending rather rapidly.
Yeah, no, I absolutely look at the Case-Shiller. I mean, all these measures, when you try to look at a price in a particular region, none of them are very good, and the reason for that is these markets are not very liquid. You don't have a lot of transactions relative to the stock, and the stock is made up of many homes that have many different kind of attributes, and so it's hard to get a gauge of what's happening in the overall market. But of the multiple measures we have, by far and away, the Case-Shiller is the best number that's currently available to us, and it's the best number because it tries to control for quality. The median price is the worst number. Think about what's happening in the market right now. We've seen a meltdown in these subprime markets. People who use subprime loans are primarily entering in the bottom of the market. This is basic statistics. You had 10,000 sales in Southern California. You take that middle sale, and that middle sale represents your median price. Well, today, we don't have 10,000 sales. We have 5,000 sales. And, oh, guess what? Those 5,000 sales predominantly that we lost are primarily at the low end of the housing market. So in other words, the median price looks like it's going up, but that's a basic bias in the statistic created by the fact that the only kind of activity going on right now at this point in time is in the higher end of the market. It doesn't mean prices are going up. It just means that there's a shift in the composition of what's being bought and sold.
What's interesting about that is I live in Riverside where, you know, you have that a lot of first-time buyer people, and that inventory is not selling. That prices keep descending because I think it's trying to find the new buyer that can qualify for the fixed loan instead of the subprime stated income loan.
Right.
And they haven't found the bottom yet.
Well, you can't, because when you look at the numbers are truly astonishing. You take some place like Riverside, where you go back to 1999, you look at prices of new homes and or existing homes relative to the income distribution, and at least 65% of the population could afford that median home in that particular area. Today, it is completely different. Today, like 20% of those people out there can buy homes. The prices have hit a point that they're so high, they're simply unsustainable. They will collapse under their own weight. They just can't possibly last.
One of the accelerants in past downturns in real estate has been the removal of liquidity. Do you view that liquidity is about to disappear from the real estate market today?
I think it already is.
Already is, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. On the subprime side, when you see all these subprime lenders starting to go belly up, there's a website out there that's quite wonderful. It has, I'm trying to think what the name of
it is. It's a mortgage basically shows implodometer.
Yeah, the implodometer, right? who's gone belly up this time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's critical. But also, you know, and remember that, you know, a lot of people keep saying, well, gee, if this bubble burst in 2005, you know, why haven't we seen a consumer effect? Why haven't we felt the general repercussions that you keep talking about? Again, a lot of economists, you know, are saying, well, you know, it would have already occurred. But no, not really. Yeah, sure, the bubble, the market topped out in the end of 05. But again, there was lots of people in the chain who were making money, and they had every incentive to continue to pump the idea that things were fine to keep the market moving. And a classic example of this is New Century. New Century, of course, is no more. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, despite the fact that today it's gone, when you look at January, February, and the first half of March, and the first 2.5 months of this year, that company put out nearly as many dollars worth of mortgages as they had back in the first 2.5 months of 2006. So this was a market that, despite all their assertions that they were tightening their standards and this and that, it was absolutely false. Every single number we have said that they were riding this horse and they were going to ride it right into the ground. And it's just over the last couple months where that credit has finally started to dry up, which is why everything's just starting to occur now.
Somebody ended up with a paper that's not going to be worth its, the paper it's written on.
Yeah.
You mentioned that there's a lot of people that didn't care. At some point, somebody probably is going to care. Who's the group that got left holding the bag?
Well, I tell you one group. That's Bear Stearns, of course. Now,
yes.
Bear Stearns has been making money doing the sales is like everybody else. But I think Bear Stearns made the fatal flaw of also believing their own propaganda, so to speak. And they kept a lot of the stuff in-house, and they're getting clobbered as a result of that. But most of the stuff has been passed on to investors. Now, you and me, I mean, we just don't know how exposed we are because, you know, we may have money in 401ks or mutual funds, and we just don't know how much of our personal investment may have been directed at these mortgage-backed securities. We just don't know because, you know, many of us don't have that good of an idea of what the portfolio is that is in our mutual fund.
Our foreign countries.
Of course, a lot of these have ended up overseas. The Italians recently basically filed a complaint with the Federal Reserve because the Italian public pension system has been buying many of these mortgage-backed securities as well, and they're starting to get a glimmer of this idea that, oh, my God, you know, we may have been sold snake oil here. We're told these are AAAs. They're not AAAs. And so they are starting to worry, and they've actually filed a Lowry Lodge complaint. So you can already see that there's a foreign component to this as well. And remember, we're a nation that is incredibly dependent on the rest of the world right now for money. All this wonderful liquidity we're enjoying is coming from the rest of the world. If they start understanding that these assets we're selling them are not quite where they're cracked up to be, a lot of the liquidity may go away fast.
I listened to one of your talks over or online, and you said if you can believe anybody, you've got to believe the bond market. So what's the bond market currently telling you?
Well, of course, when we're talking in that context about the inverted yield curve, and an inverted yield curve is one of the best signals of an economic slowdown. Now, there's two sides to this equation, of course. I'm talking about all the problems in the housing market. But the big question there, of course, is what does it mean for the rest of the economy? From that perspective, yet again, a lot of people have said, well, listen, the housing market may be a mess. There may be people who invest in these bonds are going to get spanked. But overall, the bond markets are relatively healthy. The rest of the economy is relatively healthy. And as a result of that, we will manage to, shall we say, pass through this difficult time without many overall economic problems. Now, I have to respectfully disagree with that view. I don't feel that way at all. Quite the opposite. I believe that the housing market is going to have an impact on the general economy, not through housing. Housing, the building of new homes is just not that big of a component of the economy. We're talking 5-6% of GDP. If that cuts by a factor of 50%, you're still only shaving a point off of growth for the next couple of years. That's exactly what you've seen over the last year. Housing has basically shaved about 1% off of our overall growth rate.
Okay.
The real issue here is consumers.
And what they spend?
And what they've been spending, which is, of course, is lots and lots of equity out of their homes. Now, you know, again, mortgage equity withdrawals at one point in time were up to estimated to be up to about 9% of overall consumer spending. Within two quarters, it's going to be 0%. You're suddenly not having the money. You're not having the ability to extract money from your home because, A, there's not much money left in the home, and, B, of course, because, you know, those mortgage markets are starting to dry up and bankers aren't willing to lend you money so easily anymore. Then you have the circumstance in which consumers have to pull back, and that will have repercussions for the greater economy. Now, the bond markets have been saying as much. You know, one of the best indicators of a slowdown in the economy is, in fact, an inverted yield curve. When short-run interest rates are greater than long-run interest rates, we had an inverted yield curve for about 6 months. Just in the last couple of weeks, this uninverted. We now have long-run rates that are above short-run rates. Now, I got to tell you, that is actually, you know, typically the yield curve actually goes from inverted to positive just before something hits the fan, so to speak.
Okay.
So this is again, very par for the course, and it would predict that by the second half of this year, in the third or fourth quarter, we are going to enter into a good old-fashioned recession.
Now, we usually have a slowdown in business spending lead us into a recession.
That's not actually true.
Okay, is it a good consumer?
It's usually driven by consumers. It usually starts in the consumer side of the account, durables, consumer durables and housing, and then the businesses start responding to the consumers, and that's when you see a slowdown. Now, we did see a slowdown in business spending over the last couple quarters, but I'm not convinced that that necessarily is indicative of recession at this point in time.
Okay. Do you see commercial real estate following the path of residential real estate?
Wow. Well, that's a big question. When you think about Southern California, first of all, we just haven't seen the kind of frenetic building, pace of building, and lots of excess supply in the commercial markets the way we have in the residential markets. And you say, wait a minute, housing surplus in California? We don't have a housing surplus. We have a housing shortage in California. No, not actually. We have lots of million-dollar houses, lots of million-dollar homes. We have a critical shortage of low-rent apartments, which is a completely separate issue for a different time. But we have lots of homes, lots of condos, and that's the big issue there. We haven't seen that kind of pace of overbuilding in the commercial markets, which would tend to lend itself to a little bit more stability. But, you know, those cap rates in commercial markets have gone really low.
Correct.
And that's on the basis of two things. A, cheap credit, you know, lots of cheap money, and that cheap money is going to go away, and that's going to really put the squeeze on. And B, the idea that, of course, that rents are going to start growing dramatically in the commercial sector. And that's the only way you can really support those kind of low cap rates. And to some extent, we've seen that. I mean, rents certainly have been rising at a fairly solid pace over the last couple of years. Corporate profits have been good. That has spilled over in terms of demand for Class A space, particularly in downtown areas. And that has had a big impact on driving rents up. But in the midst of a cooling economy, that's going to, you know, that sort of pressure is going to be reduced. And as a result of that, yeah, I do think we're going to see some problems in the commercial real estate markets. But I don't think it's probably going to be as bad as the residential market.
Usually, during a recession, you have interest rates decline. Is that likely to occur?
Short-run rates certainly will, excuse me. I mean, the Fed will start to loosen by the end of this year. They'll have to in the context of this cooling economy. The bigger issue is, of course, what's going to happen to the long-run rates. The long-run rates are going to be balanced off by two forces. The first force, of course, is going to be the short-run rates, which will go down, which will tend to pull the pressure on those long-run rates down. At the same time, there's going to be a drying up of liquidity because of the fact that a lot of people who've been buying these bonds are going to be a little wary of those bonds, particularly international investors. So on the long front, you got a push and a pull. It's not clear where it's going to go. I think it's very likely that by the end of the year, 10-year bond rates will actually be above where they are today.
Okay. Do you view now we're getting into a market where we have tighter credit standards? It's my feeling that that's very good for the long term, but in the short term, you've got a lot of people that bought a home with financing that really probably should have never occurred, and they're about to probably have a payment adjustment that they really can't make. And when they go to refi, that loan program no longer exists, and the lender is closed.
Yeah.
So, what do you think is going to happen as far as the next few years when all these resets occur?
I think it's going to get that much uglier out there. You're going to see continued waves of foreclosures, probably to record levels, and there's going to be a big mess. Prices will come down. There will eventually come a point of equilibrium where the pressures on the market will drive prices down to the point where people can start buying, and that will stabilize things. But we got a couple years to go. It's going to be very, very ugly out there.
I've asked a series of questions that I'm going to ask you. I've asked these of other economists, and I've just been shocked at the answer. So I'm going to mention several categories of possible future events, and I'd like you to kind of rate them, 10 being most important, 1 least important, on their effect on the California real estate market. And okay. The first one is, okay, foreclosures growing to an all-time high in the near future. 10 being most important, 1 least.
I think that's going to be probably a 9 at least.
Okay. It's interesting that we had an answer of a national economist say that was a 1, that was insignificant. And the reason that was is that the number of foreclosures as far as a total housing stock was so insignificant. What would be your response to that?
It's not going to be. I mean, you know, that was true a few months ago. But we're already seeing, again, just a record number of foreclosures occurring right now in the context of a strong labor market. Now, throw into that mix a weakening labor market, which is absolutely going to happen as this economy continues to cool over the course of this year, and you have a recipe for a real mess. So,
okay, next category, California losing migration for the next few years.
You mean net migration? You mean people basically not moving here because prices are so high?
Well, we already have a negative net domestic migration.
Right.
It's overcompensated by the immigration. But there's been years in the past where we've had this cycle where we lost total numbers, still were negative. So if we have that, do you view that as really significant?
That is a... I would say that that's not significant. I'd put that at about a 3. Okay. And the reason I say that is because net migration is... an effect, not a cause. That is to say, it's occurring because prices are high, but as prices come down, that effect will be lessened. So it's people responding to prices, not driving prices.
Correct, but it is a reactionary category. Absolutely true.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. And I do believe that you're 100% right that we are going to have a bit of a crisis in California over the next few years for businesses that want to expand. In as much as there's just no affordable housing out here. Now, that's a self-correcting problem because as demand goes down, prices will fall with it.
That's right.
But, of course, you know, in the short run, it is going to squeeze the economy.
Okay. I've probably got one last question for it. The OPEC reacts to some world event with an oil embargo as far as effect on California real estate. Do you think that's out of the question?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Okay.
You know, when you say oil embargo, are we talking like $300 a barrel? Or are we talking $100 a barrel?
Probably 100 and a half. In other words, will that cause inflation, which will cause other problems?
No, I disagree on the inflation front.
Okay.
Again, serious inflation is a monetary phenomenon. It's not caused by rising energy prices. Rising energy prices create short-run inflationary pressures, but by no means does it create long-run inflationary pressures.
Okay.
It causes a transfer, you know, between across different sectors. So from that perspective, no, I don't think inflation is the problem. But clearly, you know, it's just one more stress on an already weak economy that will, you know, knock us sideways a bit. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I view that hitting the economy more in a general perspective, that you weaken the economy in the context of that kind of increase in oil prices, and that in turn causes a loss of jobs, which in turn will hurt the housing market.
Okay.
From that perspective, though, we're probably less exposed to the oil markets here in California than they are other parts of the U.S. because, you know, we don't have... you know, we're not as sort of oil-dependent, except for on the automobile front, as many other parts of the nation. And we don't consume hardly any electricity on a per-household basis. It's amazing. California is one of the least energy-consuming states in the nation right now because we have a great climate.
Dr. Thornburg, I have to end this interview. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to doing this again.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much.
It's great to be here.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.